Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Your sport's boring. No, your sport's boring. This happens every time this type of conversation comes up. There's two groups of fans specifically who point at each other and yell at Kara. Do you know who they are?
Okay, I'm going to say one has to be soccer fans.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're always defending their sport on how boring it is. I'm guessing the other probably has to be baseball, because, again, I think that's probably the one that has the most prudence to be boring at a time, too.
Yes.
Those are two?
Those are the two fans. So, we have asked the question today, and we will ask you to make your case. We're going to give you another clue in the Upper Deck giveaway at some point this segment as well. We're going to talk more hockey at the bottom of the hour. U18 men's tournament going on. A lot of draft eligibles. Sam Cosentino is going to join us to talk about that at the bottom of the hour. But, yeah, we're going to ask you to make your case. We're going to ask you to make your case for the most exciting athlete in team sports right now. And when we did that earlier in the show, I got some replies online. We saw them in the text message inbox. Arash Madani was just talking about it with regards to baseball. The people who hear baseball and don't like baseball, your sport sucks, it's boring. That can be the case. Like, baseball overall can be in a place where it's not exciting enough right now. That doesn't mean there aren't exciting athletes within it. You can also be of the opinion that soccer doesn't do it for me. Pace of the game isn't fast enough. I need more scoring to be excited about. I just don't get it. And yet there are some exciting soccer players out there. Lionel Messi is the one that's been mentioned most often.
And you can point to what he does, Scott. Maybe not as much anymore. He doesn't have that draw for me that he did maybe a few years ago. But yeah, when Barcelona was playing, you were like, I want to watch him, because his ability in a phone booth to do what he can do with his feet while dribbling the ball and then get a shot away, that you're like, at some point, like, how does he even do that? Like, he has that ability. I will suggest now that I would, you know, for me, the most exciting soccer player to watch would probably be Alphonso Davies. And I know it's kind of a little homerish because he is Canadian, but Scott, when you watch what he can do on the pitch with his speed, he may not be a pick for a lot of people, but his speed just on the pitch to even get back and chase down a forward and take the ball away from him. Just, it's more of what he can do all over the pitch versus his finishing ability.
There have been others mentioned. Messi, as I said, has been mentioned most often. Chris on Twitter says, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He does everything with flair. Even when he does something stupid, it is to the max, says Chris. He's another one who comes up. Yes, Alphonso Davies is a little bit homerish, but you touched on something there in your answer that goes into this. And this is what we're asking all of you to weigh. When we say exciting, how much of it has to do with speed? How much of it has to do with sheer excellence? How much of it has to do with explosiveness, unpredictability? Like, these are all factors, and we all weight them differently when we're making our case in this argument, Karen. And that's why you get such a diverse range, where a player that some might not consider exciting, like Shohei Ohtani, is a good one in baseball right now. He's doing things we have not seen in our lifetime. But he doesn't necessarily do it with flair in the way that some people want the excitement to come through in this category.
Yeah, you know, he's not someone who's going to do a Jose Bautista bat flip. He's not going to do a Fernando Tatis bow and arrow. He's not going to do any of that. He's a little bit more understated in what he does. But Scott, what makes him exciting is because of how dominant he is at two positions. I mean, he is pitching and batting. And he's not a pitcher who's batting once, you know, every five starts and maybe he gets three at-bats. Like, he's going out there. He's a legitimate everyday batter. And his ability to do what he does at the plate and then every 5 days or every five starts go out there and do it on the diamond, I mean, that's something that we haven't seen since, oh yeah, Babe Ruth. You just don't see it anymore. That's what I think makes him exciting. Would I call him the most exciting athlete in team sports or exciting athlete even in baseball? Probably not. But I would say he is one of the ones where it's like, if he's on the mound, I'm probably going to tune in and want to tune in to see what he's doing.
There are a lot of athletes you can make a case for. We'll ask you to do that. In fact, we'll do that right now. It is time, as we do every Tuesday, for Make Your Case.
What are you trying to convince me of exactly?
I'm smart, you're dumb. I'm big, you're little. I'm right, you're wrong.
Convince me.
It doesn't matter what I believe. It only matters what I can prove.
I rest my case.
You rest your case?
What? Oh, no, I thought that was just a figure of speech. Case closed.
They both make a good case.
There's not a wrong answer. You can make a really good case for a lot of athletes in this, and it's the old eye of the beholder. We're putting the canvas there for you, and we're asking you to paint. What are you going to paint on it? Karen, as is often the case, I give you the first right of selection. Which athlete would you like to make a case for in this discussion?
Okay, so I could have gone with Connor McDavid, played to the crowd. People probably would have expected me to go with that. You know how I feel about Connor McDavid. But when I look at overall platforms of all team sports, and one player comes to mind, and you know, maybe it's because of the longevity of how long he's been doing it for, and the fact he's in his 30s, I have a little soft spot for that, but he's still making it must-watch TV every night. Steph Curry is the most exciting player in team sport, period. When I look at the criteria for me, what makes the most a player exciting, I look at a couple things. Is he must-see every time he puts on the jersey? Do they do something every outing that makes you go, wait, he did what? Do they make a defender or an opponent look silly on a regular basis? And do they make you want to buy tickets, puts butts in seats, see him live? Every time he steps on the court, you want to see what he can do. Every game. He gives you that, did I just see that moment at least once a game? And at least only once a game. Usually it's more. And if you have a chance to watch Steph live, you're going to take it. You want to be in the arena to say, I saw him do this. I was there when. He's that type of player. He can hit a shot from wherever he is on the court. He can make it look easy. Not only easy, he actually makes it look normal for him. He has that video game effect, and I didn't steal that from a rash. I actually had that written down in my notes prior to this because I was making my case earlier on Steph Curry. He has the ability to create separation from his opponents, a little quick one dribble to get the defender off balance, a little step back, and guess what? Swish, it's in the net every single time. When Curry's on a heater, you can tell early, you know, when it's going to be one of those games where he makes you go wow so many times and you almost forget half the things that he does. He's one of those players where the most exciting shot is the next shot because, again, he's going to show you something that you've never seen before. You can feel his enthusiasm every time he makes a three. You can see that youthful exuberance, and it comes through the television screen too. And you're lying if you said Steph Curry has never gotten you off the couch with a shot and go, holy cow, what did I just see? So he makes you go down that rabbit hole, Scott, on YouTube, watching shot after shot, highlight after highlight. He's a Picasso with a brush. He's Clapton on the guitar. He's Emerald in the kitchen. More aptly, he might be Evel Knievel every time he gets on the bike. Steph Curry is the most exciting player in team sports.
He's a really good player to make a case for, and many of our listeners have done that. They said Steph Curry, and it's not even close. The most frequent response that we've gotten today is Connor McDavid. The easiest case to make today in this country, the markets we talk to, is for Connor McDavid. You were right about that. I can sit here and make that case pretty easily, and I can take the plaudits because, as somebody correctly pointed out earlier, Connor McDavid is the best in his sport and the most exciting in his sport. It's very rare to find. So I won't make that case because it's too easy, and I'm not just going to pander to Judge Jamie here. I'm going to try to make a harder case, okay? There are a lot of different athletes I can argue for. I'm going to try to make the case for Josh Allen, quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. Patrick Mahomes is better. Josh Allen was in the MVP conversation last year, but I'm going to try to make the case that Josh Allen is the most exciting player in football right now because Josh Allen has what you just described with Steph Curry. What might I see? He's got that to his game, and sometimes that's not a great thing. The same way that Steph Curry goes out there, and because we've become normalized to it, there were times early in Steph's career going, is that a good shot? And then you just accept it. Josh Allen has that component where you're not sure still. Every once in a while, he might go off the rails a little bit. He might backpedal for 25 yards. He might run around in circles and then try to make something happen with his arm, with his feet. You just don't know. He's not as explosive as Lamar Jackson, but he's a better passer than Lamar Jackson. He's not as prolific with his arm as Patrick Mahomes, but he's better with his legs. These guys are doing this in a sport, Karen. And McDavid has this as well, where people can take your head off if they want, even more so in football. And with quarterbacks in particular, they are lined up, hand in the ground. I'm coming after you. I know where you're going to be. And you better find a way to avoid me with chaos happening all around you while you're trying to complete a pass. The degree of difficulty for me suggests I've got to argue for somebody in the NFL. And I could argue for Lamar Jackson, who has a very good case to be made as well. But I'm going to argue for Josh Allen right now because I think it's a more difficult case to make. I think that he has that escapability, unpredictability, explosiveness, and size. You know, Arash mentioned last segment that one of the things some of the great players in the game, Lamar Jackson, for example, Kyler Murray, like Kyler Murray is not going to truck you. Josh Allen might. Like Josh Allen might on a run, he might decide to take on a defensive end because he wants to pick up a first down. So I'm going to say Josh Allen. That's what I'm making my case for. Josh Allen as the most exciting player in team sports right now.
Well, Scotty, I give you credit because you went off the board of that one. Because when I think of most exciting players in the NFL, I think Josh Allen's probably about 15 on my list when it comes
15?
To... 15? Well, yeah, when it comes to my categories of what I want to see. Like, what I consider is...
15.
Exciting. Does he get me off my feet every single game? No, probably not.
So you don't watch
probably
Bills
not.
Games?
I mean, I'll go to them, but they aren't... Okay, here's another one. If, say, I have the NFL package and I can go to any game, when I think of exciting players and players that get me off my feet, like, I think of, okay, New Orleans is an offense. I want to see what Alvin Kamara can do. Okay, Kyler Murray's driving. I want to see what he can do. I think of Patrick Mahomes. Is he going to rush out of the pocket with a sidearm pass? Like, I want to see what he's going to do every time he's on the field. Josh Allen doesn't up there, and even the top 10 for me about what I want to see him do on the field.
If you put
so I give you credit.
If you put New Orleans offense ahead of what Buffalo did on offense last year with Josh Allen at the helm, we need to have a serious discussion about excitement. The Buffalo Bills were absolutely exciting last year. I already have a text coming in. Josh Allen, really? Yeah, really. I'm trying to make a harder case here. I'm making a case for Josh Allen. You ranking Josh Allen at 15 is terribly destructive to his brand, Karen. Terribly destructive to his brand.
That's why I give you credit for going off the board. And it's a tough one to do
15.
Because
Josh Allen is an experience. That's what I'm talking about here. He is an experience.
You could get the bad because you could get the bad as
yeah,
much as you
Yeah, and
get
same with
good.
Lamar Jackson. Like, that's the thing that makes Lamar Jackson so exciting as well. That Lamar Jackson is going to try things that you just don't see. Josh Allen, after escaping the pocket last year on what should have been a design run, he threw a left-handed touchdown pass. Like, you just don't know what you're going to see from Josh Allen, which is why I'm making the case for him.
Okay, let's go to Judge Jamie and get him to see, because I don't want to make the case for Jamie on this one. So
Scotty, I appreciate, you know, where your head's at. You didn't want to take the low-hanging fruit. You didn't want to take Connor McDavid, but, you know, your eyes were a little bigger than your stomach here. You bit off more than you could chew taking on Josh Allen. I have to give the decision to Karen and Steph Curry here. I'm with Karen. I don't know if Josh Allen cracks the top 10 for me in the NFL right now. When you start considering receivers, defensive players as well, like, he's exciting, yeah, but he's not even clearly a top guy in his sport, whereas Steph Curry is. And the thing I like about Steph Curry, which he has, which some of the other guys we've talked about today don't have, like Connor McDavid, like a Josh Allen, is Steph Curry knows what he's doing, and he'll let you know about it when he's in the process of embarrassing you out there. He has that swagger, that extra bit of attitude that makes it all the more exciting. So this is an easy one today, and I know, Scotty, you're giving yourself a challenge, but just a little bit too much of a challenge. Karen takes it today.
Oh, 2 for 2 now. Last two. Karen's on a roll, Scotty.
low-hanging fruit. That's fine. I see where you guys buy your produce now. Jamie, I could have gone Mahomes or McDavid. It would have been a very easy case to make. That's okay. I don't mind challenging myself. I don't mind losing Judge Jamie's verdict this week. I have no problem with that. I'd like to make a harder case. Steph Curry, Mahomes, easy. McDavid, easy. I tried to make a harder case. I'm fine with that.
Matt and Cochran says Bills fans are more exciting than Bills quarterback. Sorry, Scott. Karen wins this one. Yeah, I'd rather see who's going to fall through what do they put out there? A folding table in a tailgate with Bills fans. And I want to see what Josh Allen's going to do. I'd rather want to see Aaron Donald on a play every play to see what he's going to do than Josh Allen.
You think Aaron Donald's more exciting than Josh Allen?
Yes.
He's better.
I want to see him go after
he's
and lit
better,
up a quarterback.
He's the greatest. He's the greatest.
I think there's a legitimate
player.
Argument. I think there's a legitimate argument that Aaron Donald is more exciting than Josh Allen. I'm with
Seahawks
I'm with Karen
fan,
there.
Seahawks fan, and Cowboys fan weighing in. So I will take both of those with the largest grain of salt that I can stomach.
It's funny. I like this one. I'd rather watch Taysom Hill than Josh Allen. See, we're getting now down to 15 players you'd rather see ahead of Josh Allen, Scott. I do understand there is a penchant for seeing what he may do
Taysom
poorly.
Hill.
He may do poorly. Like, you know, if he does take that, Scott, that drop 20 yards back, try and miss a defender, and then he gets sacked. I mean, there is an excitement about that as well, to see what the bad things he will do. But my goodness, exciting players. Come on. You couldn't have at least gone, I know you weren't going to go with Patrick Mahomes, but I thought you were going to make one for like Tariq Hill or Alvin Kamara, or at least you've been on the Lamar Jackson, so I thought you were going to go with that one.
Yep, I could have made the case for Lamar Jackson. I mentioned it earlier. He makes people look like statues. He's got the I don't know what he's going to do. Took a little step back last year in terms of passing efficiency, which wasn't great, and so it wasn't as exciting in the passing game last year as it was. Cody agrees. He says Josh Allen is must-watch. 100% agree. Someone else says Bill's Lamar fan. Jackson stinks. Someone said Dak Prescott trying to pander to Karen. That is Jimmy from North End. He was on pass to smash the single-season passing yards record before his ankle injury. Well, when you're down 31-7 after the first quarter and a half, you're going to have to throw the football a lot. But they didn't win a lot of those games last year.
No, they did not. You know what, Jamie, you brought up something with Steph Curry, and it just made me kind of think of another thing why
Taysom
I love him
Hill.
And why I find him exciting is because of the fact, like, he's 33 now, and he's doing this. He still looks like he, every shot that he makes, he's like, yeah, I still did that to you. Like, at my age, it's like he's not playing, he's not the be there, done that category, Scott. And Jamie, he's one of those, I still have fun every time I hit a shot. I love that little shoulder shake that he does.
Yep.
It's just, oh, he makes it so exciting. If you have League Pass, you are going to watch Golden State at least once, twice, three times in the span of them playing tonight.
The problem with Tyreek Hill, if we go back to football for a second, is that he doesn't have the ball all the time. That's the hard part in football. And we can have a different conversation about receivers at some point in time. It's the volume of touch in the ball. And that's where, in a sport like hockey with Connor McDavid, like, the one thing you know is McDavid is going to have the puck at some point, and he's going to have some space. He might not have that in the playoffs this year. We'll see if Winnipeg, because that looks like the matchup, tries to play him the way Montreal has, where they have just put a body on him each and every time. As much as the Jets have gone through their little tailspin here, like, they're in it right now. They're in one, and Andrew Kopp talked about their lack of confidence. They have the type of forward group that is going to, or should at least, try to hit McDavid every single time they have an opportunity. We saw Montreal limit him. It's one of the things that we can argue against as far as the NHL playoffs, bringing out the best in its star players. And yet there is an element of that that we love as traditional hockey fans, that it's harder. It's more physical. You've got to win the war of attrition along the way.
Scott, when you look at teams, though, that are tops in the NHL right now in terms of hits, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but I can tell you right now, like, I don't think Carolina is, I don't think Florida is, I don't think Tampa Bay is, and they're tops in the NHL. I will say this when it comes to Connor McDavid and, I guess, Leon Draisaitl and trying to stop them. It's something somehow Montreal has been able to do, but Winnipeg can't. You got to be able to catch him to hit him. Right? You got to try and get him on the boards to try and hit him. Connor McDavid in space, you're not going to try and catch him. And that was one of the issues I think that Winnipeg had as the game wore on yesterday, is they just couldn't close the space against McDavid and Draisaitl, and that's where they are having issues. I don't know how Montreal does it. I honestly don't. And I guess in that game against Montreal, that first game where he did exploit them in the third period, I guess you can only try to contain him for a certain amount of time. But if you can't catch him, you can't hit him. That might be where Edmonton's success is this year.
We'll see, because the one thing that will happen in the playoffs that I don't think Winnipeg's employed as of yet, because we see certain teams go from regular season mode to playoff mode. I think Winnipeg has the ability to do this. We'll see if they're able to ratchet it up at the right time. There's a lot of time where McDavid doesn't have the puck that you can hit him in the playoffs. They let you get away with a lot more, and officiating is going to be a big conversation. They usually don't clamp down as much in the first couple of rounds as they do as the Stanley Cup tournament wears on. Is Winnipeg going to abuse Connor McDavid out there through the first part? And it's something we'll talk about in coming weeks.
Okay, so I'm with Scott on this one, although I wouldn't put Josh Allen number one in the NFL. He's definitely top 10. Karen is massively downplaying him. I'm just talking about when I consider what I consider excitement. And for me, he's not must-watch TV. And for excitement, probably the number one thing is must-watch TV. I just don't tune in to watch Josh Allen play. I rather tune into his, like, a DK Metcalf, like we talked about earlier. I rather see what he can do on every play. I rather see what... Oh, my goodness. Let's name somebody
Here's
else
the problem with receivers. Exciting. Here's the problem with Metcalf and receivers, Karen. How many plays are there in a football game? 100, 120? How many times does he touch the ball?
Yeah, but he's still probably going to do something a couple times a game that they're going to go, holy cow, what did I just see? I just don't see that with Josh Allen. I'm sorry.
You said my homework was to watch Bad Boys 2. Your homework is to watch a month of Bills football next season. Or to go back and watch some tape.
My punishment? Is that my punishment?
You're a Cowboys fan. This will be one of the greatest things that you've ever had happen to you if you go back and watch four Bills games from last season. I'm not even a Bills guy. I'm a 49ers guy. But I watched what Josh Allen did to the 49ers on Monday Night Football when they didn't even play particularly poorly. It might have been his best game of the season. We're talking about a guy who was, what, top three in MVP voting last year?
I'm kind of joking with you, Scott. I actually enjoy watching the Bills play. I think they're fun to watch. But Josh Allen still is one of my most exciting players. That, again, if I'm going to have the NFL package out there, probably not going to go to the Bills game unless for some reason I have a fantasy football player playing and I want to see what he could do on offense.
Someone
texted, and it would not be Josh Allen.
How is Russell Westbrook not in this conversation? Sure, a deep three from Steph is cool, but for a guard to dunk on centers every night while averaging a triple-double, how is that not more exciting than Steph? Russell Westbrook from a few years ago might be in this conversation, but not now.
There's something about Russell Westbrook, and maybe this is just personal bias. Yeah, he's talented, but it kind of rubs me the wrong way, and I don't like watching him because I know he's going stat hunting, Scott. You know, like, not a double-double, triple-double. He goes triple-double hunting, and when he's close to that, you kind of know he is. You know what? Explosive, yes. Some of the ability to get to the net. He can't really shoot threes half the time, but so there is that aspect of it. He's not going to give you that, you know, incredible step-back J from the three-point line with a little shimmy shake to get rid of the defender, but he does have some excitement about him. For me, though, I think it has to do with personality. I just don't like the way he plays the game.
Derek Henry for sure says the next texter. He can truck.
Oh, yeah.
Throw or blow past guys at any time. Throw is a little much. Maybe you're saying throw guys off. I didn't know if he was talking about throw the football, which we did see Derek Henry throw a touchdown pass at one point in the playoffs a couple of years ago. He is an exciting player. It's funny, the bigger players like Derrick Henry, the bigger backs, even though he has all that speed, they generally don't get thought of first and foremost in this conversation. But yeah, that guy's a highlight reel.
Well, because it's different, right, Scott? When you think of like Alvin Kamara, you think of, you know, that move at the line of scrimmage, that little go one way, deke the other, and then he can somehow break a hole for 30 yards. Or you think of him getting a pass in the flat, a screen pass, and he's got a one-on-one against the defender, and he makes a juke move, and then he goes for a touchdown for another 20 yards, whatever the case may be. That's what you think of Alvin Kamara, but you think of Derrick Henry. The excitement about him is, how many people can he bowl over, Scott, en route to the end zone? And he'll be able to break off somehow this guy, and I have no idea how, he's got the speed to make an 80-yard touchdown run. You'd think he'd probably run out of gas by the end, but no, he doesn't. The cornerback safeties can't catch up to him. So I would say just a different type of excitement, but definitely Derrick Henry. He's above Josh Allen for sure.
Get your votes in. You can weigh in 960, 960, or 650, 650. We filter through those inboxes every single day, and we will do so again today with regards to our Upper Deck starter kit giveaway. So we're going to give you another clue right now. We've given you two clues already. There are a couple of people who have it. We haven't seen the volume yet. This should help a little bit, clue number three. And again, if you win this, it's randomly selected from either inbox. You get the correct answer, you are in the draw. You get yourself a trading card binder, three packs of the Upper Deck Series 1 cards from this season, one exclusive Sophomore Sensations card, one poster, one trading card collector's guide. What is clue number three?
Clue number three, he is an Art Ross Trophy winner. Art Ross Trophy winner.
So the three clues. He is a former 40-goal scorer in the WHL. He played professionally in Europe, and he is an Art Ross Trophy winner. You can text into 650, 650, or 960, 960. Is there an Art Ross Trophy winner of the future playing right now at the U18 Worlds down in Texas? I'm not sure. Sam Cosentino can answer that question. I don't know if he can look into his crystal ball, but we'll ask him the importance of this tournament, and we'll get him to weigh in on the most exciting athlete in team sports right now. That's coming up next on Rintoul and Sermon.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
Yeah, I know I tried to take on a triathlon, like an Ironman, without training for it in arguing for Josh Allen. I understand that. I'm glad that I got at least a little bit of help, a few people coming to my aid saying that Josh Allen is much more exciting than Karen made him out to be. Greg, however, this would be like me trying to run, I don't know, from here to Florida if I tried to argue for a goalie. Greg wanted me to argue for a goalie is one of the most exciting things in sports. If Dominic Hasek was still playing, I might have some sort of argument. Like, Dominic Hasek was super exciting, but again, you're arguing from a position of weakness.
And I would say maybe Patrick Waugh, because you never know what you're going to get night in and night out. Are you going to get him going to the bench, Scott, and asking to be traded mid-game? That could possibly happen. Are you going to get him yelling at the refs, at his players? Are you going to see some fantastic saves? So for me, I would probably go with Patrick Waugh. So there is an option, but I will suggest he's probably not even the most exciting in the team sport at the time he played. I mean, there's obviously other players that you're going to go at. Sorry, Greg. I know, you know, goalies are close to your heart, but you're never going to win that bet.
Well, you're saying Luongo's save never made you jump out of your seat? Come on, guys.
Luongo is actually a guy who didn't get enough credit for how good he was because his positioning was often so good.
He made a few desperation saves in his day, though.
Yeah,
the one with the paddle diving back.
Yeah, and he also had a few swims that people would talk about as well.
The glove save on Ryan Smith where he did the complete barrel roll, that got me out of my seat.
Luongo was rarely out of position. It doesn't take much for a goaltender to get you out of your seat, Greg, but you are in the vast minority.
You have to say, like, watching Grant Fuhr back in the day is more exciting than watching Roberto Luongo because you never know what's going to happen because they were also not great goaltenders back in the 80s, too.
That's more terrifying than exciting, though, when it's like that.
Someone wants to know how Russell Wilson's not in the conversation. The throws he makes are electric. Take away the last half of the season this year, but over the past decade, he makes plays consistently that no one else can. If you only have one play to win the game, I take Russ every time. Mr. Unlimited. That's the unsigned texter. It's not excellence. It's excitement. Tom Brady, someone tried to make the case for Tom Brady a couple of different times. Brady's not exciting.
It's boring.
So someone talked about Mike Trout earlier, and we were having the conversation with Arash. And Mike Trout is incredible, but he doesn't scream excitement. And what ends up happening with athletes like Mike Trout and Brady is that they get to a point in their career where the volume of excellence is so great that the rest of their career just becomes like a coronation. I think Mike Trout will probably get there in baseball if he's not there already, and that's where Brady got to in football. Like, it was sheer excellence. It was domination from a team standpoint, but it was never exciting because he doesn't run around. He doesn't do things that make you go, I don't know how he did that. He just makes the right read and throws touchdown passes at critical times of games.
Yeah, you could say watching Tom Brady, if your team is down in the two-minute drill, Scott, on the fourth quarter with the game on the line, that's exciting. But again, he's not doing it with any flair because he's just making passes, and we know he's likely going to score a touchdown. Like, for me, it's just Brady's amazing in the fact that he is what he can do. But in terms of must-watch TV, I think it's must-watch and can he win again, but not what he's doing on the football field or on an individual basis, play in, play out, Scott.
Someone else says Russell Wilson, no respect from the media ever. Someone else says I'd pick Bo Levi Mitchell over Josh Allen. See, Bo Levi to me is another good example of a guy who is really, really good, but he's not terribly exciting. Like, there's a predictability about Bo Levi Mitchell. He's going to make the right read most of the time. He's going to complete a high percentage of his passes. He's going to throw a lot more touchdowns than he is interceptions, and he's going to win a lot of football games. But does he scream excitement? No. Like, Vernon Adams Jr., you could make the case, is a more exciting CFL quarterback than Bo Levi Mitchell. It doesn't mean he's not better.
No, absolutely. And I like this one because no one's actually... Scott, you and I haven't talked about him yet. When we talk about the NBA, who do we talk about? We talk about Steph. I talk about Luka. I love Luka. And FYI for our listeners, Steph is playing Luka tonight. So if you want to watch two exciting players, probably the most two exciting players in the NBA, I believe it's on television tonight. You talk about Zion, and Zion, Scott, to me, is a bit of a conundrum because do I consider him exciting? He's explosive. He's intriguing. I watch him on the court night in, night out and wonder how he can do what he does. I watch him drive to the net, and I watch opposition defenders get out of the way, being like a freight train. I don't want to get in front of them. But do I think Zion's exciting? I don't think I'm there quite yet just because of his game. You know, like, he doesn't have the flair, the flash. There's dunks here and there, and there's not the step back three. There's not the, I don't know, there's just not that pizzazz with Zion. I don't know what it is. It's just I don't find it quite there just yet.
I'll give you the comp from another sport, but we got to get to Sam Cosentino.
Okay.
I wonder if he's like this guy for you in another sport. Sam Cosentino of Sportsnet joins us now. We'll talk a little bit about this, and we'll talk about the U18 World Championships going on now in Plano, Texas. Sam, thank you very much for doing this today. How are you?
Hi, Scotty. Karen, yeah, doing great. Thanks. How you doing, Scotty? Karen, how you guys doing?
We are doing very well today, and thank you very much for taking the time with us here today. We're having the most exciting player in sports conversation. McDavid is the reason we springboarded into this today because of what he did last night, what he's been doing all season. Just overall, Sam, I know you're a lover of a lot of sports. Where do you have Connor McDavid in that broader conversation as most exciting as far as team sports go?
It'd be top three for me. But it's funny, like, I'm not a big basketball guy. I used to watch it a lot when I was younger. The Raptors first came into Toronto and went to the first game and did all that stuff and then got away from it for a bit. I used to call games back in college when I was getting my degree. But my son's into it. You know, these Raptors runs here and winning the championship a couple of years ago, it really got our family into it. And so he's been following it really closely, the video game, whatever else. That always seems to heighten the awareness. And Anthony Edwards is the guy he's brought to my attention from Minnesota. This guy's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like 6'4", he's dunking over people left, right, and center. You know, a little fake shot from the outside, step into the lane and look out. Like, I don't know, he's pretty exciting to watch. You're 19 years old and you're just going up against all these behemoths at 6'4", which isn't really big for a basketball player. And he skies over everybody. So he's a lot of fun for me to watch. But I heard Karen talking a little bit about Zion, and I hope that he finds a little bit more of the dynamic game because collecting cards during COVID with my son, we've got a few Zion rookie cards, so we're hoping that those take off.
So you mentioned McDavid's a top three guy for you. Who else would you put on that podium when you're talking most exciting athletes in team sports?
Well, Mike Trout, I think, has to be. I think Ohtani, like what's really cool for me is because I had such a long history in baseball and the two-way player was just a pipe dream in all the years that I worked for the Blue Jays. And so Ohtani comes along and then he gets hurt and this and that. And next thing you know, he's doing it all. He's sitting second in the lineup. So not only, you know, I think Joe Maddon is probably the perfect guy to be able to manage him because you're looking at someone who always thinks outside the box. But, I mean, my goodness, to be able to pitch the way he does and hit the way he does, lead the league in home runs, you know, retire 14, it was the last 15 last night, that to me is exciting. I love that. I love that he's not just a pure out, that he's buried in the bottom of a lineup, that he's an effective hitter in the lineup. And, you know, when you have the opportunity when he starts, it just, even as a manager in the American League, you have so many more options available to you when you don't have to use that spot. When your pitcher can hit for you. So, I mean, that's pretty exciting. His teammate Mike Trout, really super exciting. Tatis Jr., really exciting. You know, I think Vladdy has a little bit of that going on, although, you know, I'd rather see someone have some sort of dynamic ability. So Trout, he steals bases, he plays great defense, he hits home runs, he, you know, doubles, all that kind of stuff. So those guys would be in the conversation for me. But Ohtani, two-way baseball player, doing it that well at the major leagues, that's pretty cool.
Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet's prospects guru. He joins us this morning on Rintoul and Sermon. Let's talk a little bit of U18. It got going yesterday. It does not get the same attention from hockey fans in general that the World Juniors do. However, there hasn't been a lot of amateur hockey this year. With that in mind, how important is this tournament for evaluating draft-eligible players?
It's huge. It's the one event where everyone in the peer group, best on best across the world, will get an opportunity to play against one another. Now, it does exclude some of the first-year draft eligibles because if you're born after September 15th, 2002, you're still eligible for the 2021 draft as a first-time player, but you're ineligible to play in this event. Only players born in 03. So we are missing some of those high-end, what we call late birthday players. But for the most part, I mean, every scout I talk to is there. Unfortunately, you know, Sportsnet didn't deem it safe for me to go. So I've hunkered down and watched two games yesterday. The U.S.-Russia game was like, it was unbelievable. But this is hugely important. Every friend I have in the scouting world is there, and they're happy to be in a rink and watching it. So it's hugely important.
Sam, when it comes to talking to scouts and what they're seeing, how much of it is not I know it's hugely important, but not putting the entire weight on this tournament, still looking at the body of work?
It's a great question, because I did talk to a few people yesterday, and they feel that there's going to be mistakes made simply because this one event is going to be is going to take up the mass of your live in-person viewings. Having said that, they're all attending. They're all going to make their notes and stay for the entire duration of the tournament, which also rarely happens. So, you know, to be able to hunker down and allow players to get comfortable and so on and so forth, it's huge. But, you know, another thing that I talked to a scout about this yesterday, the one thing that they really kind of hang their hat on is the ability to watch a player at different points in the season to see how they progress, because scouting obviously is all about projection. So you want to see a player, how he starts the year, what he looks like, where's his growth at maybe the midpoint in the year at some sort of event, World Juniors, other international events, whatever the case might be, and then see how he's progressed as he gets towards the end of the year and into his team's playoffs. So the progression piece is really what's missing this year, and that's a hugely important element when you're trying to project how that's going to look for the player beyond being drafted. So that part, no doubt, is missing. Are people going to overweigh what's going to happen in this tournament? No question. But there is really no other mass amount of live in-person viewings that you're going to get best on best other than what this tournament provides.
And that's the funny thing about this year's draft, because, I mean, I think the consensus overall number one pick is still going to be Owen Power. And he's someone, Sam, that you mentioned is not actually at this U18s because he's a later draft pick or a later birthday. But looking at this draft, is this the most uncertain draft? I think that's probably obvious, that we've seen in, I can't even count how many years.
Yeah, I would say so. It's certainly the, you know, we started doing stuff in 2014. I've been following it for my 15 years, you know, covering the CHL. And no doubt this will create the most uncertainty. So, you know, you're seeing teams that have taken a very, you know, accentuated stance in terms of, you know, if I look at Toronto, for example, I think they have 6 picks in the next 2 drafts. And pretty clearly when they went to the podium last year in 2020, when they had 11 picks, I think 3 Finns, 3 Russians, 3 American-born players, and maybe 2 Canadians in that group. So they were really excited about having their players, you know, playing games. And I think that's why they went down that road. They didn't want to draft players that they feel were going to miss their development or didn't get enough live in-person viewings of. So it's like, yeah, it's just one of those things where the uncertainty is there. There's really no way to get around it. If you're a general manager that can move picks out of this year and maybe kind of push them along to 2022 or 2023, then that option may be available. But there's also teams, Karen, that are taking a stance that are saying, hey, you know what? There's probably going to be a few hits that are later in this draft of people that maybe we didn't expect, but we have some inside intel on. So maybe we want to gather a few more picks later, where we feel that the team giving us those picks is going to value them less than we are, and we might be able to find some, you know, some deals, steals and deals there later in the draft.
Sam, Karen suggested that Owen Power was the consensus number one. That's not necessarily the opinion I've seen. Do you have him atop your draft board?
He's atop my board right now. I mean, you know, 6'6", 215-pound defenseman, skates like the wind, doesn't have the most physicality to his game, but those guys are really hard to find. And, you know, I always look at when you're trying to value players for the draft, D is the most important thing, and then it goes to your centerman, and then it spreads out to your wingers. But the reason for that is if you can find a defenseman who is doing his heavy lifting throughout the course of a regular season, he's probably going to play 25 minutes a game. That knocks off half of the game essentially for you. And that lifting gets even heavier when you get into the playoffs and you see the Hedmans of the world playing, you know, 28 minutes a game. I mean, that's really, you just take your mind off of one position for half the game that really has a significant impact on your ability to coach a team. So I think that's why there's so much value there. And when you're looking at bigger, stronger guys, you tend to think that they're going to have more durability, so that they're going to be consistently in your lineup, being able to provide that 25 to 28 minutes a night. And that's why there's so much importance and emphasis placed on them.
Sam Cosentino, prospects guru with Sportsnet. He joins us here on Rintoul and Sermon. Luke Hughes is not as big as Owen Power, but he is bigger than his brothers Jack and Quinn. How does he project as an NHLer in your mind?
It's really funny because he handles the puck with confidence and is not afraid at all with the puck to do anything, whether it's on the line and he's the last guy back, bringing the puck up the ice, you know, joining the rush, initiating the rush. He's really puck confident, very much the same way that his brothers are. I think the foundational pieces are there the exact same as brothers. So you talk about the skating, you talk about the confidence with the puck, and you talk about the hockey smarts. Well, they've grown up competing against one another. They've got both parents that were, very much into the game as coaches and players. And so that's all that these guys have ever known. I mean, they came out of the womb and that was it. They pretty much had skates on. So I think when you look at Luke, you're looking at the guy who possesses all those abilities. I think it's still, defensively, I think he's a little bit further along than where Quinn was at this point, yet there's still a lot of growth potential there for him. But you like the size. You like the fact that you've got two brothers that have done really well before him as Jack's, starting to get moving and grooving here. We obviously know what Quinn's been able to do. So I project him as being a top pairing guy at the next level. And I've also got him very, very highly rated.
Sam, I want to talk to you about a player that's not draft eligible just yet. Twitter tells me, and little small snippets that I've seen on Twitter, video-wise or GIFs, that Connor Bedard is very, very good at hockey. Is he worth the price of admission?
Oh, man, it's so awesome to be able to watch this guy. And I'm so happy they were able to get him into games in Regina. You know, you talk about the years 16, 17, 17, 18, hosting the Memorial Cup, really good, talented teams there for John Paddock and Dave Struce, and then go through a bit of a downturn. And then as a result of that, get the first overall Bantam pick and the first ever exceptional player allowed to play in the Western Hockey League. So no doubt this guy is worth the price of admission. His highlights from Regina, awesome. We've already seen a highlight on the shootout attempt in a pre-tournament game at the World Under 18. So I'm really, really excited and looking forward to watching what he's able to bring to the table in this tournament and beyond. And I just can't say enough about it. And he's been, I think a huge benefactor of the fact that other than the six exceptional players that we've seen come before him, he's had the most time to prepare for his first season. He's in a first season in the Western Hockey League where, travel was limited to just the bubble, so he didn't have to go anywhere. He was the guy on this Regina team who I know Dave Struce projected early on to play him maybe 10, 12 minutes a game. And by the time he actually started the season, they're like, we don't have any choice. He's our best forward. He's got to play. But I think the most telling thing for me, Karen, is the fact that you're looking at 2003 born players that are available to Hockey Canada. You have all the OHL players, all the WHL players. The Q players weren't allowed to participate because they're playing in their playoffs. But the pool of players of 03s is bigger than it normally is, because if your CHL team is in the playoffs, you're not eligible to participate in this event. And so when you go and you take a double underager, Bedard, a 2005 born, and you place him and you place him prominently in your lineup, boy, that tells me everything. I mean, Hockey Canada doesn't usually miss, and I don't think they've missed here with Connor. He's exciting. If you get a chance to go watch and play wherever it is, take the opportunity.
Well, I hope we're in a better place come the fall and that fans across Western Canada will have that opportunity and have the Pats travel to the locales that they normally do. As you mentioned, he's not draft eligible for a couple of years. And there are a bunch of players in this tournament who just haven't played much hockey, and the context of where they might have played is different. Who are the biggest curiosities to you among some of the highly bandied about prospects, but you just need to see more because of a lack of playing time this year?
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, I look at Brant Clark. He's a right shot defenseman, 6'3", about 185 pounds. Played with the Barry Colts last year and set all their 16-year-old defenseman records. He's a guy who ended up going over Slovakia. I know it was a little bit tougher treading than he expected, but by the end, he was excelling and basically running the power play in the men's pro league there. So he's a guy I really want to see. Shane Wright, of course, has to be at the top of that list for me. I mean, this is a guy with 39 goals in Kingston last year as a, in his first year as a 15-year-old exceptional status player. I've watched him skate a couple of times. He is in phenomenal shape, and he has literally taken advantage of every second that the pandemic has afforded him to prepare himself for this event and for getting back on the ice in meaningful games. So he's another guy. But some of the guys that I haven't seen live and just watched on tape, you know, Simon Evanson, the big defenseman who played for Sweden, was pretty effective last night. Isaac Rosen would be another guy. Matvei Mishkov is a guy who's probably going to challenge Bedard for that number one spot. He was really effective for the Russians last night. So there's just a plethora of talent out there. And, you know, but I think Shane Wright has to top that list for me based on what he did in his rookie season in Kingston.
Yep, Shane Wright, like the rest of us, we're all going to say coming out of this pandemic, you know what the thing is? I'm in the best shape of my life. Best shape of my life.
Sorry, Scotty, I can't say that. Sorry, buddy. My wine fridge is in the hinges on the wine fridge are in the best shape of their life.
Yeah, exactly. Tolerance at an all-time level. Other than that, not so much. Hey, Sammy, always appreciate the conversation, man. We'll do this again soon. Enjoy the tournament, and thanks for educating us a little bit here today.
All right, Scotty, Karen, congrats on the show, guys. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
That is Sam Cosentino. We can always go deep dive on prospects, and we will more as we get closer to the draft. It is an event that doesn't get as much attention quite often, Karen, because of the time of the year. We're going into NHL playoffs. There's CHL playoffs going on, as Sam mentioned, and people are looking at their respective junior clubs and the push toward the Memorial Cup. But with the context of the hockey landscape this year on the amateur side of things, this will get a little more attention. And I didn't see the game. I just saw the result. It was Russia trailing 5-1 in the second period, came back to win 7-6 last night. Like, just some wild results already at that tournament.
Yeah, I didn't watch it either, Scott. And it's got to be interesting for some of the prospects, too, because you got to wonder, like, some of these guys haven't played hockey this year, or they played overseas, and they're just coming back, or it's just limited action. And, you know, they might be pressing a little harder than they normally are, or trying to get their feet underneath them. So it'll be interesting to see who kind of rises and falls. But I do think that scouts are going to take it. Yeah, it's important, but with a bit of a grain of salt, because of the fact that you have to take the whole body of work and think about what the player kind of was before, and maybe last season as well, if you haven't seen maybe the development that you thought from 16 to 17. But I'm happy some of these kids are getting to play hockey, though, because it has been a challenging season for junior hockey players.
Tristan in Cochrane says, don't know if you've seen Shane Wright, but good Lord, he is the next big thing in hockey. Keep those texts coming in. Many of you still weighing in on who's the most exciting player in team sports. There's a lot of players you can make your case from. We'll further that discussion, because when you've got a sport that needs a perception change and you do have some exciting players that are playing the sport, how do you make that translate to the perception of your sport overall? We'll dig into that next on Rintoul and Sermon, and another clue coming your way for the Upper Deck giveaway. That's all in the final hour of the show.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
It's a lively text message inbox on both sides of the Rockies today. 960, 960, 650, 650. We'll encourage you to weigh in throughout the course of this final hour as well. It's Scott Rintoul, it's Karen Sermon, the show known as Rintoul and Sermon for obvious reasons, and we're talking most exciting players. Connor McDavid, what he did last night. Man, that quest for 100 points, it is very real. We can talk about it a little more in just a couple minutes here, Karen, but it feels like game in, game out, he is making us reach new levels of applause, gratification, use whatever word you want. Like, I know there are some who are tired of it in the same way they tired of what Wayne Gretzky received when he was doing things back in the day that nobody had ever seen before. But I think for most hockey fans and most sports fans in general, they have the exact same reaction you and I have.
And I think it's just an appreciation, Scott, that we're seeing it night in and night out. And it's something every night that's a little bit different, or it reminds you of just what makes him great too. Like that burst of speed, you know, the sneaky precision on an assist, like just something that you're like, basically, he only has the ability to do these things. And I think that's what people appreciate. I did see the text earlier, Scott, to the inbox saying, McDavid is exciting, but I don't want to talk about him in Vancouver. I think, you know, Canucks and Flames fans, there might be a little envy when it comes to what they see night in and night out from Connor McDavid. But I think if you're a hockey fan, you can appreciate his greatness, even if you don't like the team he plays for. And I think that's what, yeah, Connor has.
Well, there's been some solace, I think, that both fan bases can take in the fact that he's been great for as long as he's been in the league, and yet the team's done very little. And so it's been easier to stomach, I think, for a Canucks fan or for a Flames fan prior to, you know, the 1 year in 2017 and maybe these last couple years, because there's a satisfaction when one of your rival teams has a great player but falls flat. And that's what the Oilers have been. This year, maybe they don't. And the Oilers have been far more consistent during this season than I thought they would be. They've had the shortest swoon of any team in this division, quite frankly. The most they've lost is three consecutive games. They were all at the hands of the Maple Leafs. And after that, there was like a real quick referendum. And what did the Oilers do? They won seven of their next nine. Winnipeg's having their first swoon. They've lost four straight. Toronto just came out of one where, as good as the Leafs have been overall this year, they'd lost five straight games. They had goaltending concerns. Edmonton really hasn't experienced that this year.
No, they haven't, Scott. And honestly, even when I still look at them, I'm still going to probably put Winnipeg or Toronto above it in terms of who I have more faith to come out of the North Division. I don't know why. I still don't have faith in what the Oilers can do because of their depth. I still question that. And their back end a little bit. But they're showing that they're a lot more resilient than maybe I thought they were coming into the season.
He's an exciting player. We're using this across sports today. Who are the most exciting players? Who's the most exciting athlete in a team sport right now? You can weigh in at the text message inbox, whichever one you choose to utilize, 960, 960, or 650, 650. We want to bring this conversation to baseball. Chelsea Janes is a national baseball reporter with the Washington Post, and she's good enough to join us for a few minutes here today on Rentoul and Sermon. Chelsea, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We are well, thank you very much. We're talking excitement. We're talking individual players. Who is the most exciting player in baseball currently?
You know, for me, certainly, I think Shohei Ohtani is must-see TV anytime he's pitching, hitting, whatever he's doing, because it's unbelievable what he's been able to do on, you know, both sides of the ball, so to speak. I think Fernando Tatis is a close second just because he's stirred up so much already with the Dodgers and, you know, kind of putting the Padres back on the map. But for me, I cannot miss Shohei Ohtani, and he's just a kind of once-in-a-generation, once-in-a-lifetime type of player.
The good thing for baseball is there's a number of young players that you can make the argument for. You mentioned a couple of them, but there are others on this list, and some of them aren't as young as others, like Mookie Betts, for example. How does baseball utilize the number of exciting young players and just exciting players in general to perhaps alter the perception of the sport, which is not anything associated with excitement right now?
It's a good point. You know, I think for Major League Baseball, the key is to get out of the way. Like you said, there's a lot of young talent. There are many players on many teams. Some of them, you know, even have sort of burst onto the radar this year, who are a ton of fun to watch. I mean, Jazz Chisholm with the Marlins is kind of his first year in any of our consciousnesses. And, you know, he's on pace for a 30-30 season, just a ton of personality. Guys like that are all over the league. And I think what you do if you're MLB is, you know, try to get them on national TV as much as you can, you know, pump up that Padres-Dodgers rivalry, and then let them take over. Because, you know, we've seen Fernando Tatis Jr. not only perform on the field, but, you know, do some trolling off of it, of Trevor Bauer, of others. And I think, you know, that's the kind of thing that brings younger people in, is getting to kind of see all sides of the game and see those personal rivalries. And I think the more you let the players sort of take over, especially with a number of young players that are so, you know, kind of adept on social media, the more that brand will grow and you know, be more accessible to people that are a little younger.
Chelsea, we've seen baseball try and make the sport more exciting. You know, we've seen some rule changes already. There's obviously some changes that have been discussed that they're trying out in different minor leagues and other leagues in the United States. But is there something that you think there is potential for other rule changes that could make the game more exciting?
You know, I think I certainly agree with their goal of trying to reduce the number of strikeouts, trying to increase the number of balls put in play, because, you know, it's action. It's not sitting there and watching the pitcher throw the ball into the catcher's glove. It's actually something happening that forces action. I think for me, what's interesting in watching the league propose and sort of experiment with these changes is the amount of grumbling that they sort of encounter from people who, you know, are arguing that the league needs to adapt. It's like, well, you know, if you're gonna make that argument, then let them try. And I sort of applaud them at least for testing out a few rules in the Atlantic League and other places. You know, moving the mound back during the second half of the season in the Atlantic League is going to be really interesting. You know, maybe the results will be such that, you know, it's something that come to the majors and change that pitcher hitter balance, but they're not going to know unless they try. And, you know, I think, I don't know that there's a better way to do it than putting it in leagues that aren't the majors, seeing what happens and trying to adopt it. But I think some of those changes will make their way up for sure.
Some of it's a change in attitude as well. Chelsea Janes, she covers Major League Baseball for the Washington Post, and she joins us on Rintoul and Sermon. And we saw a slice of that from a guy in the game, Trevor Bauer. What he said to me was very refreshing on the weekend. Hey, I do it to other guys. I don't mind if they celebrate a home run. Are we going to see in the next few years a change in the way we perceive the code of baseball?
I hope so. And I think we're already seeing it. You know, I think a lot of people were surprised by that Bauer answer, but it showed someone who has a pretty solid understanding of the fact that, like, if you're going to dish it, you have to be able to take it. And I think for years in baseball, the idea was, you know, you could dish it, but if somebody hit a home run back off you or something like that, you weren't sort of allowed to retaliate. And it didn't really make a lot of sense. And, you know, I think what you're seeing is sort of an understanding across the game that letting personalities show is a good thing. And it's, I think in front offices too, as you hear people talk more and more about this, you're hearing executives, you know, people who evaluate these players begin to understand that when you let them sort of be themselves and not have to think about what they're doing, not have to think about how they react to a home run, you know, stuff like that, they get that much better. So I think the dialogue is changing both in the way fans sort of interpret celebrations. I think there's a lot more people that want to see more of them and more personality on the field. And in the appreciation that sort of higher ups have that, look, maybe the way we've always thought about this isn't actually, you know, not only good for the sport, but good for the players.
Do you think continuing to grow the international aspect of baseball within the major leagues could help that? And I think of something like what they do in the Korean baseball, like Korean baseball organization, like bat flips are a thing and it's fun and there's chanting in stands. Do you see more incorporation of the global game into Major League Baseball in coming years?
I do think it's coming. I'll be interested to see how those things carry over, because certainly when players go to Korea in particular, you hear sort of rave reviews about the environment, about the energy, about the little chance they have for every player. And yeah, like you mentioned, sort of just the overall spectacle of it all. It's more like a football game or a soccer match than it is an American baseball game. And I think that what we're starting to see is a lot more traffic between Japan and the United States, Korea and the United States. You know, a lot more eyes on things like the Caribbean World Series, where there's a ton of emotion, you know, every winter, it seems, you know, in between those countries that, you know, play each other every year and have something to prove. And, you know, it's obviously appealing to people. And so I think the more you sort of let people be themselves when they get to the United States, instead of saying, hey, whatever you did there, this is the top league, this is how you have to be, the more you're going to get some of that energy, the more you're going to get those international eyes on the sport, and the more, you know, those traditions will work their way in. I think it's happening. I think you're seeing players a lot more willing to go play in Japan and Korea. And just the more people are exposed to, you know, kind of the positives of those experiences, I think the more people here will understand that, you know, maybe this is a way we can, you know, create a chant for someone, or, you know, those things will carry over and really bring in a lot more people, which I think is the goal.
Chelsea, and I apologize if this was your article, but I did read an article in the Washington Post last week talking about vaccinations within teams in the Major League Baseball. And of course, teams want to get up to that 85% threshold. However, it seems that there's a little bit of resistance from some players, and maybe baseball was surprised that more teams haven't gotten to that threshold quicker. Have you been surprised with how the vaccination rollout is and maybe the hesitancy of some teams?
You know, I don't think I've been surprised, but I do think that, you know, people in the game are frustrated. So I think that's a really fair read. I think that what the league knew, and certainly the players union knew, because they had kind of pulled players and been told, look, do not make this mandatory because we're not going to put up with that. So they had a sense that, like, not everyone was going to get on board with the vaccine for whatever reason. But I think, you know, what you've seen is the league try to look at that and say, okay, let's put these incentives out. You know, if 85% of the team gets this, you can go have dinner with your family on the road. You can stay with your family on the road, you know, sort of all these things that will make baseball players' lives a lot easier and more fun and would make anyone's lives that way. So they, I think, anticipated some resistance. I think what you're starting to see, and you can kind of hear it when managers are asked and things like that, is just a general sort of like, I don't know what more we can say to these guys to convince them to do this. And it's certainly on some teams, it's not a lot of guys. Some teams it is. But I think for all the same reasons that you see people in American society, you know, pushing back against the vaccine, you know, or whatever, you're seeing it, you know, in samples of the major league population too. There's a lot of conservative guys that, you know, end up in Major League Baseball who, for whatever reason, aren't trusting of the vaccine, don't believe that they need it, whatever. And the league's efforts so far to sort of help teams convince their guys, you know, haven't gotten a whole lot of teams over that threshold, which is, I think, it's frustrating to the league, but also to the teammates of those guys who want to kind of get back to normal.
Yeah, I could see that. Maybe down the road, as the season progresses, some of these guys might have maybe a change of mind just because the season drags on and they want a little bit more flexibility in their lives. Chelsea, one more question for myself. Is a 7-inning game a no-hitter?
Oh man, I think so. I think it's a 7-inning no hitter. You know, I think we can call it that and sort of appreciate that and understand that that's a little different than a 9-inning no hitter. But I don't know what else you're supposed to do. Or you're not. It's not a normal game. It's a 7-inning no hitter. So for me, I'm happy saying like this guy threw a 7-inning no hitter and sort of delineating that. I think we can all sort of figure that out. But it has been really interesting to watch that conversation. It's really interesting how baseball people get worked up about that stuff. And I think that's part of what makes that sport so great.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And we're always up for a good debate on sports radio, believe me. Chelsea, thank you very much for taking the time. I know you've got a busy day. We'd love to do this again in the near future. Have a great and safe and healthy one.
Thank you so much. Same with you guys.
That is Chelsea Janes, writes for the Washington Post National Baseball Reporter. Yes, qualify it as a 7-inning no-hitter. Not the same no-hitter, but a 7-inning no-hitter. We don't have to go under the same blanket umbrella, something you and I talked about yesterday on the program as well. I'm all for what she had to say there. Some really interesting points about changing the perception of the game, and I do think this applies to hockey as well. One of the things we always say about hockey is, look, if you can get someone to a game, they'll realize how exciting it is. But the casual sports fan outside of Canada doesn't have great drivers to get him or her to a game. If you can get them there, awesome. They'll go, oh, man, this is great. I don't know how I've been missing this as a sports fan. Just showing the product on television, just seeing it in the listings, that doesn't do anything for the casual American fan. It'll be interesting to see if ESPN, TNT, the streaming stuff that they released with HBO Max and with Disney Plus, if that changes the perception whatsoever.
I think, Scott, when it comes to ESPN and TNT, the biggest thing that they can do is try and maximize their superstars. And I say that as in, remember when ESPN had hockey back in the day and you've got Alexander Ovechkin doing a SportsCenter commercial. Can you get a Connor McDavid to do that? Kind of get him out of his shell, kind of see if, you know, people can relate to him on a bit of a personal level. I also think too, you've got to bring in, you have like the Charles Barkleys of the NHL world. I don't know who that is. I honestly don't. But if you could find some former players that have big names and big personalities and are a little kooky at times and can make fun of themselves, I think that's going to draw eyes to the sport as well. I think it's going to be a little bit more than just the product on the ice. I think they're going to have to make a bigger, I don't want to say circus, but spectacle of it.
Does it have to be kooky personalities from within hockey? I'm not sure. Maybe you can find those, and maybe there are some great ones out there. Maybe it's just taking those personalities from other sports that are already minted in the minds of sports fans south of the border and having them endorse hockey, for example. Having Shaq do some sort of crossover with hockey, not necessarily with Connor McDavid, but just trying to turn people on to the sport. It is the cross-promotional opportunity that now exists when you've got the big umbrella of an ESPN, when you've got TNT on board with what you and I both agree on is the best panel in all of sports. Like, there's a way to do this. Get LeBron James at a hockey game. All of those sorts of cross-promotional opportunities exist. Because I do believe if you show most sports fans Connor McDavid, the highlight package that he is on a nightly basis right now, they'll say, that's pretty cool. I wouldn't mind watching some of that. Mm-hmm. I can tune in, but they may not even know, or they may not even care right now.
Yeah, because when you look at, like, Scott, what if you're watching SportsCenter in Canada, you're going to get a hockey highlights for the first how many packages? Probably the first 15 minutes, unless there's a big story. If you're watching SportsCenter in the U.S., You may not even get a hockey one unless it's a Sidney Crosby or a Nate McKinnon and maybe a Connor McDavid type of package, but there's not a whole heck of a lot of it. What I think ESPN can do, and I don't know if you saw this, Scott, when they first got announced, I'm sure you did, that they were getting the package. Stephen A. Smith went on like a 6-minute, 8-minute rant of what he knows about hockey. Stephen A. Smith is the biggest name on the ESPN platform. Like, they use him for everything and for a reason. He's good at what he does and he draws eyeballs to ESPN's or their radio or television. And if they can get someone like him talking about hockey or promoting hockey or going off on a rant in hockey, I think, again, like, that's what you're talking about. Like, not guys necessarily that are in the hockey business, but big names in the media world that are talking about a sport.
And just expose yeah. more people to it. And that's what the platform is there for, or you would hope that it's there for, with these new broadcasting deals, which are certainly more wide-ranging than what we saw in the past with one exclusive provider and, hey, we got to work around this. And like, we all saw some of the scheduling of things and remember the impact that even like the Kentucky Derby and horse racing, because NBC was a big provider of that. Well, we can't have playoff overtime games going into the Kentucky Derby coverage. Maybe we need to look at altering things, and traditionalists pushing back on things. Like, it's going to be different. And there's the opportunity I can see. I just hope that it works this way, because the cross-pollination with other broadcasters, with other sports, like if Patrick Mahomes starts endorsing hockey, for example, that helps. It does.
It does.
Maybe in Canada you think it shouldn't. Maybe you have the attitude, who cares what they think? Well, I'll tell you who cares. The guys playing the game, you should care because you want the salary cap to go up for your local market and you want to be able to spend more money on big-name players. Like, you should want the growth of the game in the United States for all of those reasons.
Scott, this text comes in unsigned. I like this one. ESPN or TNT needs to hire Ilya Bryzgalov to be a commentator. Like, guys like that, guys that have personalities. I mean, he may ask them if they were in the woods with a bear and, you know, who would win a fight or something like that, or he may try and fight a bear. But again, it's just guys that have personality that can break down the game. I do think for the U.S., as you've seen with how they promote other sports, for them, it's all about, it's not so much what's on the field, it's about what players can bring off the field in terms of personality. Like, they like to exploit that.
This text speaks to that. It is not signed, but it says this. To be the most exciting player, which is a discussion we're having today, you can get in on it. We got one more segment coming up in the program. Want to get your text in if we can. 960, 960 or 650, 650. To be the most exciting player, you have to have a bit of swagger, says this texter. Look at Steph when he hits a three. You either love him or can't stand him. It's one of the arguments that was made coming out of the World Juniors a couple of months ago about Trevor Zegras. Remember what he did before the gold medal game? Well, I don't think this goaltender's been tested. I think we can exploit him. The star of the U.S. team, who ended up being the MVP of the tournament, was outspoken. He was a little bit brash before the game, and he called his shot, and he was right, and the U.S. got over. And one of the arguments made at the time was, Trevor Zegras, I don't know if he's the next Connor McDavid as far as skill, but if this is the personality he can bring to the table, if he brings a little bit of this swagger, that is an attractive personality for a lot of sports fans.
Yeah, you know, I totally forgot about that situation. And the funny thing is, as Canadians, we hated it. We're like, what are you talking about? What are you doing? But there is something to be said. I mean, look at PK Subban. Love him or hate him, he speaks his mind. And he's someone that you can take and you can promote. And there is something about the quiet superstar. We see with the Mike Trout, the Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, best player in the world for how long, Scott? But again, like, who was it we had on earlier? Mike McKenna saying, I don't know a single thing about Sidney Crosby. He's been in Tim Hortons commercials and that's it, basically. Maybe a Gatorade commercial here or there, but nothing that involves actually him stepping out of his shell. And I do think that if we can get more of those players and more of those people to do that, and I think social media is helping to a point, that it's going to grow the game in the United States. Because another thing that you've learned, and if you learned it from basketball, Scott, they love superstars individually. And so if you can, like LeBron James, Steph Curry, like you love the individual superstars. So if they can develop ESPN, TNT, individual superstars and their personalities, and it doesn't matter who they play for, you're going to have an audience.
Dave in East Van says, you do know that most Americans have trouble watching hockey on TV because it's too fast to follow. It's because they're not accustomed to following the sport.
Is that the case anymore, though?
I think someone who's uninitiated with the game, Karen, man, woman, doesn't matter, child, if you have not been accustomed to watching hockey, you don't know where the puck's going to go. We take it for granted as Canadians who grew up watching this game week in, week out, and now with the proliferation of television and more channels, game in, game out, you have a pretty good idea of where it's going. If you talk to people who've never watched a hockey game and you just sit them down in front of it, their eyes are a little bit all over the place because they don't have the anticipation of where the puck's going to go. We take it for granted, honestly. Like, go watch a power play. Other than people just yelling shoot at the game, like, you can see when a penalty kill overcommits to one side, you have an idea in your head of where the puck should go next. So you anticipate that. Think of how fast the puck moves on any given play. And if you don't have any idea where it's going and you don't know much about the strategy of the sport, that can be difficult to follow. It's the whole reason they introduced the puck tracker back in the day, which we all make fun of now on Fox, and the puck having the blue or red tail on it on the screen. But it's the whole thinking behind that, because the audience they were exposing the sport to just didn't know where it was supposed to go.
I just thought they just thought that the audience in the States was a little bit lesser intelligence level than there was up here. Honestly, I had no idea why they introduced that. I thought it was stupid, obviously. Us here in Canada thought it was stupid. I just think the game is too fast for people to understand. I think that is a bit of a dying breed, because there are other fast sports out there, Scott. But I guess, you know, and if you're in the mind of, if you don't watch it a lot, you just, and then you can't see what's going to happen, you just turn your eyes away because it's not entertaining to you. But I do think that there is a way for, or I do think that may be a little bit of an outdated thinking when it comes to, especially south of the border.
One more clue to get you in on. You can get those takes in on most exciting athlete in team sports, but we have one more clue. We're going to qualify a few more people, and then Jamie is going to select randomly from 650, 650, and 960, 960, one winner in each market for the Upper Deck Starter Kit, trading card binder, three packs of 2021 Upper Deck Series 1, an exclusive sophomore sensations card, a poster, and a trading card collector's guide. We have a few correct answers. We do not have enough correct answers. In my estimation, we need more volume here, Karen. So what is the fourth and final clue for today's player?
The fourth and final clue was a fifth-round pick in the NHL entry draft. Was a fifth-round pick. So, Scott, I'll go through the clues again because we need some more people getting this correct. Former 40-goal scorer in the WHL. Played professional hockey in Europe. Was an Art Ross winner. And fifth-round pick in the NHL entry draft.
That should narrow it down for a lot of you. There aren't a lot of fifth-round picks who've won Art Ross trophies, a WHL player as well. Maybe the European clue throws people off the scent a little bit. It just happens to be part of his bio. If you know the answer, text it in 960-960 or 650-650. We'll incorporate some of your answers into our final segment. It's time for notes and quotes as well. Eight games on the NHL sked, none of them involving Canadian teams tonight. That's coming up next on Rintoul and Sermon.
Rintoul and Sermon.
We have a text that starts, "Hey, I'm sorry to be a hater," which I will get to momentarily, but it reminds me that you're a hater, and I didn't know you were a hater until last night, and I'm surprised by this. I'm Scott Rintoul, she's Karen Sermon. I'm talking to you specifically, Karen. You are in the minority on this one.
I have good taste.
You can be of that opinion. But I think we're going to find out from everyone else. Like, it's nice to be confident, and it's nice to think that you have good taste, and really that's all that matters. Whether it's your clothing choices, hairstyle, teams you choose, all of those things. You can say, I don't care what you think. I have good taste. The populace at large tends to decide that on this program. They ruled against me, as did Judge Jamie, despite the fact that I tried to go off the board a little earlier today. You do not like which uniforms in the National Hockey League?
Oh my goodness, those yellow and purple throwback LA Kings uniforms that they were wearing last night, those are hideous.
Are you kidding me right now?
No.
Those are great, Karen. I won't say that they are the best throwbacks of the retros that came in, the reverse retros that came in. I'm not going to say they're the best, but they're up there. They're really good. I wish they had the old Triple Crown logo and they went with more of a current logo with the LA Kings with the purple and gold. You do not like that color scheme?
No, I don't whatsoever. I don't whatsoever. I think it looked like can look like a hamburger out there on the ice at some point in time, Scott. They were no nothing. I can't do it. I want to say I'm a traditionalist. Like I like.
Nope, you're not. Because those are traditional.
That's the original. But I like the Montreal Canadiens. That's what I like. I don't like out there color schemes. Put it that way. Purple and yellow is out there. Yes, it is. Sorry, I'm going to say it. I don't like it.
Well, there's only so many teams that could have red and blue or blue and white before you had to change things up as they expanded the league. Like, the Kings were going to have to do something else. So you're a fan of the black and silver and
yes,
roll with
yes,
that or black and white with the Kings.
Give me, like, the Wayne Gretzky black and white and silver ones. Those ones, to me, are what I like. Like, those are timeless. Those can be timeless.
Chef Swagger from Hell's Kitchen, Karen, is so wrong. Those Kings reverse throwbacks are definitely top three in the league. They are fire. No, Karen, this is worse than the Josh Allen take or Riccio hating poutine, says the next text come in. One of the hosts at Sportsnet 650 is who's being referenced there. The jerseys are great. They're great.
No,
they're not
I
as good
like
as the Avs. Like, the Avs are amazing. The Avs reverse retros are fantastic. I love
with
everything.
With the blue pants? The ones with the blue
great.
Pants?
The ones that
those are...
Those are
terrible.
You don't like
they
the Avs reverse retros?
With the blue pants, though. I don't get the blue pants.
Yeah, that's fine. The jersey itself is fantastic. I'm fine with the blue pants and the blue helmets, but the reverse retros where they've got the Nordique logo,
oh, the Nordiques I'm fine with.
That's
the
what
Nordiques
I'm talking about.
I'm fine with. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, they didn't wear it in every single... blue pants outfit. I'm talking about the Nordiques throwbacks. I'm talking Kings throwbacks here.
Corey from Red Deer. Karen, you are crazy with a K. Purple and gold is amazing. Dave and Cedar, those Kings yellow and purple jerseys are what the kids would call, quote, drip.
Yes.
I don't even know what that means. Drip. I'm not... Oh, this is Nathan Comox actually agrees with me. Karen, you're so right. Those Kings jerseys are brutal. Give me the Gretzky's one, like Karen said. Scotty and everyone else is crazy. Yes, Nate, we're on the same page. I like them.
And Kings jerseys look great, says this next text. Karen needs to drink more.
Maybe I do. And maybe my opinion will change when it comes to watching them, because I'll be watching them through, like, fuzzy goggles.
Brendan in Nanaimo asks, do you like the Lakers jerseys? Same color scheme as the Kings throwback.
Not a big fan. Maybe because they're not as busy. I'm okay with them. Like, less material. Not as busy.
I told you would be in the minority on this one.
There's a couple people that are.
Yeah, there were a couple people that agreed with me on Josh Allen as well, but I knew it was a very difficult case to make.
See, but you took your acceptance where you could get it, right? I'm taking my acceptance where I can get it. Someone's on my side.
Karen, I just want to clarify. You said the Kings when Gretzky was there was their best jerseys.
Well, those the gray and I don't know if they're
so boring. I don't understand this obsession with the '90s jerseys. I grew up in the '90s, yeah. And I hate most
yeah,
of those
the silver,
jerseys. They're awful.
But they look great on the ice. You know, they're just I don't know. I just find the yellow, and especially with the yellow jerseys, like I find them gaudy. It's my opinion. This is our talk show. It's why my name's on it. I'm going to give my opinion. I think they're gaudy.
Judge Jamie, we've kept the courtroom open for one more case here today. You ruled against me earlier. Surely it's not going to happen for a second time today. As much as you would love to give Karen a third straight win, you have to call her on the carpet for this.
I think the two wins have gone to Karen's head. She thinks she can do no wrong here. She can just throw out any take and not be called on the carpet for it. No, you're wrong. You're wrong, Karen. Sorry about that. But Scotty, clearly in the right here.
Oh,
they're
I knew.
Great. They look sharp.
I knew I was going to get this. Karen being a Karen. The throwback Purple Kings and their fire. We've reached peak 2021. Someone at 650 going full Karen on the LA Kings best jersey. You see, this is why... I can't do these things sometimes, Scott, because if I do it, I get called out for being a Karen, but I'm not complaining. I'm not telling people to not wear their masks in public or feed me when I'm not wearing my masks. This is not full Karen. I can go full Karen on you. But
well,
this
you're
is
lucky.
Just a matter
you're lucky. When people disagree with my takes, they come up with four-letter words in the inbox, but I can't repeat those on the air. And to be fair, you put this out there to me. Like, I didn't ask you your opinion on the Kings jerseys last night.
No, you didn't.
You just sent it my way, and I couldn't believe it. It kept me awake at night, Karen. I was very disappointed in that.
Well, we were going on the conversation of how are we going to do our make your case argument. And I said, I'll do a make your case that the LA Kings retros should never be worn again.
Look what I spared you
like,
from.
And then I woke up this morning to one, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Come on, Karen. Hey, I don't wear a lot of purple. I don't wear a lot of yellow. Maybe it's just not my colors. Not my color palette, Scott.
It's a great looking sweater. It's a great looking sweater. It's Scott Rentoul. It's Karen Sermon. We will announce our winners by the end of this segment. That's the type of thing that the NHL needs to market a little bit more as we segue into what Gary Bettman had to say. We talked about whether or not the game could grow in the States. I told you about that text that came in that segued me into your hate for the Kings jerseys. This one says, I'm sorry to be a hater. I don't think hockey will grow in the States. It's just not an easy sport to play. People are already set in their ways with the sport they watch. Star players are too introverted to be promotional. And a big one is the sport is by far the least diverse sport of the big four. A lot of those things are true right now. It doesn't have to be the case all time. Look at how basketball has grown in this country. Like mm-hmm. if we were having the discussion about basketball when I was growing up, there's a lot of people that just didn't want to have anything to do with the sport. But things changed, and there was more exposure, and the Toronto Raptors, Vince Carter, Steve Nash, like there's a lot of things that had to happen to get us as a country to where yes. we are with basketball. Maybe the U.S. never gets there with hockey to that same level. It doesn't mean you can't grow it. I believe they can. I believe players like Austin Matthews in non-traditional markets like Arizona are helping things. What's happened in Los Angeles with Wayne Gretzky and the effect and some of the kids that have come up and now could end up being prominent players down the road. Like, there are ways that it happens. It just might take a while.
Mm-hmm. Scott, would you suggest, and I think this is probably, I don't know if I'm going out on a limb on this, but could you suggest one of the worst things for growing the game in the U.S. was Austin Matthews getting drafted by a Canadian team? It's Toronto, I understand that. But I think that's one of the, when you look at growing the game in the U.S., it would have been way better if Austin Matthews was drafted by, not necessarily his hometown, Arizona Coyotes, because they are kind of where they are in the spectrum of teams in the United States. But you think of like an Austin Matthews getting drafted by like a New York Rangers or Dallas Stars even, because we know that the game is growing in Texas as well. I think that could have been, like, you don't get the option of where, you know, he was the top player in the draft that year that Toronto had the first overall draft pick. I understand that. But I do think that, like, if he was drafted by a U.S. team, the sport would have taken, the NHL could have used that a lot more to grow the game in the States.
It could have. The argument would be that maybe he would have been with a dysfunctional organization that has never been able to surround anyone with a great deal of talent, and he doesn't blossom into what he's become. It's the inevitability versus the well, it's the inevitable factor versus the make him a star and then go. And one of the things about Austin Matthews that'll get talked about in coming years, because of the term he signed on his contract, only being 5 years at the money he makes. Mm-hmm. That part of the reason is that when he comes to free agency, he's going to go back home or he's going to choose a market in the United States. And maybe there's a very good argument to be made that you grow the star elsewhere, and then once he becomes one of the premier players in the game and chooses to go somewhere, that might actually be the best bang for your buck.
Yeah, and I could see him wanting to go back to the U.S. too. Like, I don't know what he likes about living in Canada. Obviously, he signed his second contract with the Leafs, but like you said, it was just a 5-year deal. So I could see a thing where he wants to either not go home or go somewhere where, you know, like go to a California team because it's going back to the States. It's nice weather. It's a little different. The media scrutiny is a little different. So I could see him going back.
BP and Mission saying Austin Matthews in the yellow and gold. There you go, Karen. Big market in the United States. Maybe he ends up there. Gary Bettman was asked today. The deal gets announced. It's TNT. They're bringing in a new component to this operation known as the National Hockey League and the way they're going to market in the United States. Here's what Gary had to say about why the National Hockey League is excited to go with Turner Sports.
From our standpoint, we looked at the strength of the Turner Sports portfolio, which is outstanding. They do a great job of covering their other major properties. They put a fun and innovative factor into all of what they do. And we're excited to have that same treatment for our sports and for our fans. We love the reach of their linear networks, both TNT and TBS. And as we look to the future, we're excited about the digital properties and in particular HBO Max, and the Bleacher Report. For us, this is a perfect fit. The excellence that Turner Sports represents with 20, I believe, recent Sports Emmy nominations, the coverage, the platforms, this represents excellence and more hockey in more places. We couldn't be more excited about our moving forward together. This is going to be a great partnership.
Nothing screams excitement like Gary Bettman.
He sounded super stoked in that one, Scott. That's about as excited as you probably see Gary Bettman. I mean, maybe it was visually you could see him maybe put a little smile on his face. But yeah, he's not exactly the hype machine, is he?
No, he's not. And he does make some very good points in there. The fun factor, that's part of it. And we have a number of people in the text message inbox. We can have a bigger conversation about this on a future show, you know, about the entry point and how it is expensive. I agree with that part 100%. And it is a limiting factor for hockey. We've known this for a very long time. It's in this country and, you know, with less facilities in the U.S. The one thing about the U.S., when they decide to build stuff and make it happen, it happens in a hurry.
They go
on. Yes, they do. And they get sponsorships done in a hurry. And I, for one, have long argued that, like, even equipment, the way that you have to buy it at every level of hockey, and there traditionally have been very few places that say, like the football model, for example. Like, football has been a high school sport for the most part in this country. And you don't go buy your own shoulder pads and helmet every single year. No, that belongs to the school. And you rent them basically by paying an entry fee to play that year. And that's what you do. And when they need equipment to be replaced, it's replaced. A model like that could exist in hockey. Yeah, you're going to need your own skates. And you're probably going to want your own gloves. And certainly you need your own stick, own jock. But after that, some of the equipment could be borrowed year after year, especially at the younger levels, making it much easier for kids to get into the sport.
Well, don't even, Scott, like up here, I don't have kids that play hockey, or I don't have kids. But, like, don't you generally just take it to what, like a Trader Joe's or whatever the case is too? And so you can like buy it secondhand. Doesn't that happen quite a bit to make it more accessible for people?
It does. It does. But again, it's not in every single community. Sometimes that's a little harder to come by. And again, depending on where we're talking about, ice time is so expensive. Like, there's a lot of reasons admissions fees are expensive. I know it's something they've tried to combat in recent years. We'll spend more time on it on a future program. It's a very good point that our listeners bring up. All right, let's get into the 8 games on ice tonight. We do notes and quotes here, a rapid edition, if you will. A bunch of the games don't even matter tonight, so we won't spend much time on them. The ones that do right now, as far as jockeying for playoff position, mostly in the East. We said it was going to be the best division before the year. It's turned out to be the best division. Man, is it competitive at the top. Islanders, Washington, Boston, Pittsburgh, two great matchups tonight.
Yeah, Scott, and two great matchups in the fact that, like, they are very close in the standings. And for those of you who don't know, I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins actually are leading the East Division right now. They have 67 points, 49 games played. They've played the most amount of games for all those teams that are in playoff positioning, Scott. They take on Boston. Again, they had that 1-0 game on Sunday. Boston is basically securely in that 4 spot in the East Division. They have 60 points. They're 4 up on the Rangers, who are still, you know, mathematically evolved, but the Boston does have 2 games in hand. So right now, you're currently looking at a Boston-Pittsburgh first-round playoff matchup, what you could see tonight.
Healthy scratch. We associate it with Columbus, but it feels like we've had that conversation more this year than other years. Players being benched, players being healthy scratch. Jake DeBrusk is a healthy scratch for the Boston Bruins in this game against Pittsburgh tonight. Here's his head coach, Bruce Cassidy, as to why.
We just need a higher compete level. You know, every player's at a different place in their career here, and we just talked to him about the standard we'd expect him to play to. Everyone's going to have an off night. But, you know, that's the message. It's not about individual stats. It's about you need to help this team win. And in order to do that, if guys aren't scoring, and I'll put him in that category, say there's a few others for sure, then help us win. And say we're in the home stretch here. We need whatever it takes, player 1 through 20 in the lineup that particular night, help us win. That's the messaging to him. He's not alone in terms of some of his numbers not being where they want to be. But like I said, at this time of the year, that sort of has to be secondary, and playing for the crest in the front and second effort and compete level. And Needs to be higher for him. And like I said, he's not alone. There's a few others, but that's a decision we're making tonight.
He's got the type of game that translates to the playoffs when he's at his best. Has not been a good season for him. He's one of the players who's been impacted by COVID as well along the way. But it's been a while now that Jake DeBrusk's name has been in trade rumors around this league.
Yeah, I know. I remember back early on in the year, Scott, when he was struggling and there were some healthy scratches and he was kind of in the doghouse. It's like, okay, he's a player that maybe you could trade into the Vancouver or the Calgary market. And is there another disgruntled player that maybe could go the other way? Could he fit? But obviously, Bruce Cassidy using this moment, Scott, because he needs this player in the playoffs to make a push. And he's just telling him, like, right now, you're not playing the way we need you to play going into the playoffs. So you're going to watch. And for a young kid, you know what? Again, watching from the press box, not always a bad thing at this point in the season.
Three good games in the Discover Central for the same reason, actually. You've got one team that's at the top of the division in each of the three matchups, and then you've got a team that's scrapping for the fourth playoff spot in the other. So you've got Tampa Bay, Chicago, Florida, Nashville, Carolina, Dallas. This should be good tonight because you've got some desperation with the teams that are hosting Chicago, Nashville, and Dallas. And you've got those teams at the top that are jockeying so they don't have to play one of the other three in the first round in Tampa Bay, Florida, and Carolina.
Yeah, this is absolutely what looks like to be, Scott, the most intriguing division down the stretch. Carolina locking in a playoff spot last night. Florida and Tampa Bay actually could have last night as well, Scott, but Nashville beat Florida in regulation, so Nashville stays alive. Florida can clinch tonight. Tampa can clinch tonight with 2 points against their playing Chicago, you said. And Dallas is the intriguing team to me, Scott, because they're 2 points back of Nashville. And they both won last night. But Dallas has two games in hand in Nashville. And I believe they play one more time this season. And that's on Saturday night. And that could be basically for that fourth spot. So a lot of intriguing storylines coming out of this one. But Florida, Tampa Bay can both clinch tonight with victories.
If you are Rick Bonus and the Dallas Stars, are you wearing the blackout jerseys with the neon? Are you going that direction, Karen, as we talk all about your uniform preferences? Do you see them last night? They were wearing the black with the fluorescent green.
They're okay to see them in like a quick moment. I like them. Like, I like them to see them. I'm not a big fan of seeing them play a whole hockey game in them. They're kind of a little distracting, that green. Hey, Scott, we're talking about the Dallas Stars. Do you want to give away who our winners were in our contest today?
Hint, hint.
Okay.
Hint, hint.
Former 40-goal scorer in the WHL, played professional hockey in Europe, Art Ross winner, and was a fifth-round pick in the NHL entry draft. I just teased it. He would be Jamie Benn of the Dallas Stars. Congratulations to Jesse in Nanaimo. Jesse in Nanaimo, you're getting one of the starter packs. And Matt in Calgary. Matt in Calgary, congratulations.
And just a reminder, those Upper Deck starter kits include a trading card binder, three packs of the 2021 Upper Deck Series 1, an exclusive sophomore sensations card, one poster, one trading card, collector's guide, 4-point night for Jamie Benn. We try to tie it into something current for those of you looking to get in later in the week. We try to take something that's happening in the NHL. Maybe we wouldn't talk about that much. Jamie Benn had a big night for the Stars. Their playoff push continues. Played 19 games, I believe it was, in the German League back in the day during the lockout season of 2012-2013. Yeah. So that's the clue that it might have thrown a few people off.
That's what threw me off, Scott, because, again, we came up with this player, but you were the one who came up with the clues. And that one, when it came out as the second clue, I was like, he played in Europe. Like, I know he played in the Dub. We just talked about that. Did he go over there and play 1 year? No, he played for the Hamburg Freezers in the 2012-2013 season. 19 games, 7 goals, 13 assists, and 20 points. There you go. Hamburg Freezers in the 2012-13 season.
I wondered if a lot of people might guess Leon Draisaitl, who actually never got to 40 goals in the WHL. He is an Ross Trophy winner, but he never played professionally in Europe, actually. He played in the Dub. He played in the A. He did not play professionally in Europe, despite the fact that he is of German descent. He was also not a fifth-round pick in the NHL entry draft back in 2007, like Jamie Benn was. Congratulations to Jesse Nanaimo, Matt in Calgary, as Karen mentioned. That's going to wrap things up. Good show today. A lot of feedback today, which is always awesome. We were hoping you guys would jump in with both feet. You did at 960, 960, 650, 650, the most exciting player conversation. It was a very good one and gave us a little fodder for future shows as well. Maybe uniforms another day. Boy, do we have a lot of reaction to that when you brought up your distaste for the Kings uniforms at the end of the program. It was nice of you, though. It's nice of you to send me out on a good note. The audience agreeing with me as they carved me earlier in the program for making one of the more difficult cases I've tried to make on this program in its existence.
Yeah, I was, you know, I was going to take the L for you there, Scott, because I know you took the L earlier.
Good teammate.
You're
a good teammate.
You didn't take the low-hanging fruit like I did, but you tried to go out on the limb. Maybe should have gone with a little bit of a, you know, more obvious choice, but I give you props for trying to go outside the box.
We are back
tomorrow.
Still not
top 15.
Hope all of you will be back tomorrow as well in Calgary. We'll let the hand-wringing continue after last night's loss to the Montreal Canadiens. We'll turn things over to Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, and the Big Show. Bick and the Boss coming your way in Vancouver. Also a 2-1 loss on the West Coast to get into. And what lies ahead for the Vancouver Canucks, who will start the first of 5 back-to-backs tomorrow with their final game of the season against the Ottawa Senators. We're back tomorrow. Big ups to Greg Ballack back at Mission Control. Awesome stuff from Jamie Dodd, producer of this program, and the reigning judge on this program as well. We're all back tomorrow. Have yourselves a great Tuesday.